Winchester Talking Newspaper, Friday the 19th of January 2024. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. And your readers today, the 19th of January 2024, are Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
David Baldwin.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are hundreds of homes without water again, warm welcome for new bishop, Winchester's memories brought community together. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Margaret?
Right, hundreds of homes without water again. Residents anger at lack of contingency plan. A wave of anger has greeted a major loss of water in Winchester for the second time in a year. Nearly 500 homes in Winchester have had to put up with little to no water. Residents in Kingsworthy and other areas such as Fall Flood, Winnell and Stanmore were forced to queue up for bottled water following a fault at the water supply works in Easton. Issues began last Wednesday and worsened late on Friday, January the 12th, and continued into the week as the utility company worked around the clock to fix the issue. However, residents were angered by Southern Water's lack of contingency plan, with the incident being labelled a recurring problem. One resident who lives in Upper High Street and asked to remain anonymous said, "Some parts of Winchester have had no water all weekend. We don't know when it will be back on. This is the fourth time a pumping station has failed in our area in the last 6 months." Tankers were sent to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on Saturday as a precaution. Other businesses, such as Winchester Science Centre, closed and reopened on Monday. MP Steve Bryan, visiting Easton Waterworks on Monday, said, "My constituents and I are left once again bemused and annoyed that there is yet another problem with Southern Water. It's been an extremely trying weekend for some, and while safety has to come first, which is why things shut down the moment a problem was detected at the Easton Waterworks, we need some fast answers as to what's happened and why." Bottled water stations were opened at Sainsbury's Badger Farm, East Winchester Park and Ride and Worthy Lane Coach Park, while residents on the Priority Services Register were entitled to water deliveries. Two of the stations were closed on Monday. A Southern Water spokesman said yesterday, "Our teams worked around the clock to get the works running again, after temporary equipment was installed. We're awaiting water quality results today from one of our reservoirs. If there are no problems, supplies will return to normal later tonight into the early hours of Wednesday morning. But residents in Broadview Close, Kingsworthy, have had enough after nearly a week with next to no water." Natalie Page, 38, is pregnant and looking after her two-year-old daughter. The mum has travelled 40 minutes to have a shower at her parents' home and is considering staying there. Natalie said, "It's been terrible. It's basically been a week with no water most of the time. When there is water, it's not enough to do anything with. It's a trickle at most." Eric Barnes, 19, said, "I've been having to go to my sister's in Alsford for a shower. Everything has gone wrong. Southern Water keeps pushing back when they say it will be fixed, but we have been getting bottled water from them. There tends to be water when I get up for work in the mornings, but then it goes again." City Councillor Martin Todd said, "Lots of people across the city are very angry with Southern Water right now, and rightly so. I've been contacted by residents who haven't been able to have a shower for days and have been sent texts to say their water should be back on when it isn't.
Let's have the second headline story, please. David.
Warm welcome for new bishop. And there are three pictures. There's one of him being greeted by the Roman Catholic Bishop of Portsmouth, Bishop Philip Egan. The start of the procession in the square, which is traditional, and the new bishop with various dignitaries outside the west door of the cathedral. The new Bishop of Winchester has officially taken up office at a historic ceremony. The Right Reverend Philip Mountstephen was announced as the new bishop in July 2023 and officially started in January. Bishop Philip will serve as the 98th Bishop of Winchester Diocese, which covers 255 parishes across most of Hampshire, parts of Dorset, the Isle of Wight and the Channel Islands. His service of welcome was held at Winchester Cathedral on Saturday. The last time the city saw such a service was more than a decade ago, in 2012, for Dr. Tim Dakin. As is traditional, the service began at the Church of St. Lawrence in the square, where the new bishop made oaths and declarations. He was then met outside by the Mayor of Winchester, Angela Clare, and city officials, plus the head teacher and a pupil representative from the Bishop of Winchester Academy in Bournemouth. With other bishops of Hampshire, they walked to Winchester Cathedral, where Bishop Philip followed tradition by knocking on the west door. The bell ringers sounded a special peal to accompany the bishop across the outer close. Speaking last year, Bishop Philip said, "Being a bishop is all about serving other people, and it's a great honour to be called to be Bishop of Winchester. It's a very ancient role within the church and the life of this country, and I feel hugely privileged to be asked to do it." The service was a ticketed event, but the ceremony could be viewed online for free via live stream. MP Steve Bryan said, "After a difficult period for the diocese, we welcome Bishop Philip, who brings great experience and cheerfulness to one of the most important positions in the Church of England. I look forward to his wise counsel locally and to working with him as a fellow Member of Parliament, given his place in the House of Lords."
Jane, let's have the third headline story, please.
And that is, Winchester's memories brought community together. A project that's been months in the making finally came to fruition as members of the community gathered for its exhibition launch. St John's Winchester opened its Fabric of Winchester Memory Quilts exhibition at the Arc, inviting its 17 partners, contributors and community figures to the launch. More than 120 blocks, that's sections of embroidered fabrics, based on Winchester memories, have been made and donated to make up the six quilts that would be donated to the Winchester Hospice. Launched in September, the Fabric of Winchester has collected and shared dozens of personal stories, helping to shine a light on the St John's Winchester Dementia Support Service. Volunteers from the Wessex Quilt Makers have worked at weekly sewing bees since November to complete the quilts. The project was led by St John's fundraising manager Maddie Cowell with the help of memory artist Katie Rundle. The Mayor of Winchester Councillor Angela Clear said, "It's brought the whole community together." Prince's Mead pupil Daisy Swanson-Law used Winchester Round Table as the inspiration behind her patch. Daisy, aged 10, said, "Me and my mum thought that the round table was a big part of Winchester and therefore be good to do. I'm really happy with the result. It took me about a week and a half to finish. I was the only one in my school who took part. It's a creative idea and it's fun." Flick Drummond, Meon Valley MP, enjoyed making her Winchester Railway Station block at one of the community sewing days. Speaking at the launch, she said, "Thank you for giving me the opportunity to contribute to one of the quilts along with many others. All six are absolutely fabulous. I know the people staying at the Winchester Hospice will spend a lot of time looking into the amazing work that has gone into each one of these squares. It's been really interesting reading about other people's memories of Winchester. I was particularly pleased that this initiative has been aligned with St John's much-needed Dementia Support Service, helping to shine a light on the power of personal memories. The community sewing days were great fun. I think I was there for about 3 hours and had to be dragged away in the end. I hope we continue to do more of these other projects. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clear, said, "They are all so lovely. It's brought the whole community together, forming all these new partnerships. And now the quilts are going into Winchester Hospice. This is fantastic." Clive Cook, CEO of St John's, who will be stepping down later this year, said, "When we first conceived of this brilliant project, we had three things in mind. The first was to really engage in a project that had an outcome that reflected the rich history of St John's in the city, which goes back to the 1100s. We are part of the story of Winchester and of individuals in the city and beyond who have benefited from our care. We wanted to create a creative project to engage a collective of people to reflect on their own memories and produce something material that had represented that." And this is accompanied by several beautiful pictures, as you can imagine. There is one of Clive Cook explaining the story of the quilts to other people there, and also of the Mayor of Winchester and the Deputy Mayor looking at studying the quilts, and a group of the people who had created them all noticing the beautiful squares that have been embroidered and made by local people. And if you go to the Ark, the quilts are not there, not only they're mounted on tall stands, but there is also a board with an explanation of the quilts at their side. They look really, really beautiful.
And that concludes the headline stories. Now we'll continue with death notices and Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Bulgarum Diary, editorial comment, and first person. We'll end with items of general news. I'll start with the death notices, and we've got 17 of those today. Arnold, Brent Arnold, unexpectedly at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 65. Briggs, and Rose Briggs, sadly at home, aged 93. Carter, Trevor John William Carter, peacefully aged 96. Cherrett, Jean Carroll Cherrett, peacefully. Cross, John Lyford Cross at Basingstoke Hospital, aged 87. Freeston, Stella Freeston of Culver Road, Winchester, peacefully in her care home. Green, Nellie Green, peacefully surrounded by her loving family. Hall, Henry Nelson Hall, peacefully at home, aged 100. Haywood, Jean Prudence Haywood, peacefully aged 90. Judd, Ernest Charles Ernie Judd, aged 89. Keeley, Peggy Keeley. 12, MacDonald, Rosaline MacDonald from Oldsford, aged 90. Matthews, Christopher James Chris Matthews, aged 74 at Winchester Hospital. Smith, Marion Smith, peacefully at Tegfield House Care Home, aged 93. Watson, Hazel Watson, peacefully aged 78. Weston, Michael Weston, at home, aged 96. And finally, Wilson, Sylvia Ann Wilson. And now we'll have Christian comment, read by Margaret.
Right. Guilt, helpful or unhelpful? This is written by Maura Redmond. I don't understand why I act the way I do. I don't do what I know is right. I do the things I hate. There can't be many of us who don't feel like that sometimes. It could be anything, from a serious offence to the food we eat, the exercise we take or don't take, bad-mouthing someone, not standing up for something we believe in. Oh, there could be a very long list. It's a very real and sympathetic comment, and you might be surprised to find out who first said it. The quote is from a modern translation of St. Paul's Epistle to the Romans, chapter 7. Paul isn't the easiest of the early church writers and can come over as grumpy and judgmental, but he is very human in this line. Probably most of us want to be a better person. whether that means more successful, more healthy, or more kind. Perhaps we'd like to be better at our job, or a better parent, or a better son or daughter. The great thing is that even when you think you've gone wrong, you can usually just start again, try to do better next time. But should you feel guilty about your mistakes? Once you start thinking about it, guilt is a very weird concept, in that it is a strong and important idea, but can simultaneously be seen as both positive and very negative. Is it a helpful idea to aid you in doing better, or a bad thing, a burden that will fill your head and make you miserable? Not many abstract concepts are so divisive. It's not just a question of moderation. People feel strongly one way or the other, and there are many dismissive references to particularly Catholic guilt. Religion and guilt are often linked together, and it's true that churches encourage us to think about what we have done wrong and to use that as a starting point for improvement. Dwelling on the past isn't always a good thing, but trying to learn from your mistakes does involve some looking back. It's getting the balance right that counts. It might be more helpful to think in terms of reflection, a neutral phrase for looking at what we are doing. Taking time out for yourself and thinking hard can be helpful. One description of spiritual reflection is silence, listening, awareness, and relationship with self and God. There are very useful guides and apps online, and you can hear from many people who have been helped by following these ideas. January is a month where many of us try to improve ourselves and our lives, and there's a joke attitude of people being sure from the start that they are doomed to failure. But that's not necessary. We should have more faith in ourselves, as well as a kindness to ourselves. Living up to the standards we want for ourselves, shouldn't be that difficult. And Christians believe we have God on our side, and that's a comfort and help in doing what we know is right.
And we'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. And there are 15 letters this week, and David will start.
This one is about Clean Air Night. Wednesday, January the 24th, is Clean Air Night. Now, this is an opportunity for the residents of Winchester to consider the air quality in the city and what each of us can do to improve the air we breathe. That may mean walking or cycling rather than driving a car for short journeys, and also reducing the amount of combustion we contribute from our own homes. Replacing gas boilers with air source heat pumps is a great start, but it's not possible for many people. However, one thing we can all do is to stop burning wood in our homes. Very few people need to burn wood to heat their homes, but it is a desire buried deep inside of us that attracts us to a cosy fireside. Take a moment to go for a walk on the next cold and still night, and you may be surprised at the amount of smoke in the air. More information about the consequences of burning wood is available at www.cleanairhub.org.uk/clean-air-night. And this letter came from Robert Carter, Northbrook Avenue, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
And Judith Martin writes Housing Focus. Both Simon Lever and Eben Wilson are right, Chronicle Letters, January the 4th. Bushfield Plan must be cancelled and we need homes. But Eben Wilson is misinformed. The church commissioners who own the land at Bushfield tried for at least 20 years to get permission for housing there. They were repeatedly and correctly dismissed. The current plan provides no permanent housing. Then the site was shorthorned into the local development plan by one council leader, to the surprise of officers and everyone else, for a knowledge park, not a classification actually known in planning. Now it's become some massive business-come-academic proposal offering thousands of jobs. Winchester's unemployment rate is about half the UK's average. It will not be local people who take these jobs. Where will the new employees live? Probably they will just commute in, adding the council's difficulty in hitting its net zero target. Meanwhile, there is ample space available in the University of Southampton's science parks. Winchester undoubtedly needs genuinely affordable housing, but that is not what is proposed here. In fact, the development will require the building of even more homes than are already needed. Eben Wilson must be aware that there are at least two major development sites being discussed yet again: Central Winchester, Silver Hill, and the station area. Both previously promoted out-of-date models for retail and office space, but hopefully now will focus on housing. Certainly one of the architects cited for Central Winchester, Peter Barber, has an extraordinary record of success with attractive, high-density, low-rise urban social housing. Then there are the future plans for St John's Moor Barracks, which could easily provide a relatively self-contained housing development. I may be a middle-class tree-hugger, although not a dog-walker, but anyone who has read anything I've written over about 30 years must know that I believe firmly in the importance of both social housing and the natural environment. They should not be incompatible. What I object to is unfettered growth that serves only the developer. And that's from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And this is another letter about Bushfield Camp from Penny Lawrence. And it's headed "A Different View of Bushfield Camp." The visualisation from the City Trust, chronicled December the 28th, was an important contribution to thinking about the extensive proposed development of Bushfield Camp. The Bushfield developers have many resources to generate powerful images, and these can be highly influential, so it is valuable to look at other views. I attach an image of the site at dusk, viewed from Badger Farm. I wonder if readers can imagine lights from a multi-story car park shining from the top of the Bushfield Hill. A lit-up car park would be a far cry from the church construction of chapels on such prominent sites, as was the case on neighbouring St Catherine's Hill. It would be an illuminated beacon to remind us of the 4,542 car trips a day to the proposed development in this time of climate crisis, statistics courtesy of rigorous calculations by WinACC. And this is from Penny Lawrence, Loudon Close, Badger Farm. And there is a photograph. It's not very clear, actually. It's got a vast piece of grass in the front and some trees at the back.
This is a different take on the sub-postmaster scandal. While the current focus of attention has been on the hundreds of miscarriages of justice resulting from alleged cash shortfalls by sub-postmasters across Britain's post offices, I wonder if such is the fallibility of the Horizon software that there are also hundreds of postmasters who are substantially in credit. I doubt we'll be hearing from them. And that comes from Graham Tillotson, Chilbolton Avenue in Winchester.
And on the same theme, Act on Scandal from David Gosney. Squirming and excuses from politicians of all parties, but Tories have been in control since the Post Office and Horizon IT scandal came to light. What obviously needs to happen, and quickly, is for Parliament to legislate in the next 2 weeks to 1. Ensure all prosecutions of postmasters are quashed. 2. Pay out all compensation and make sure that Post Office pays all legal costs of the wronged Post Office staff. 3. Remove any honours from Vennels and Crozier. 4. Remove any possibility of the Post Office having the ability to pursue criminal charges in future. Ensure that the Post Office pursue Fujitsu for the full costs the Post Office incurred through Fujitsu's negligence and failure to provide satisfactory performance of contract, and Fujitsu told that they get no more government contracts until they have fully reimbursed the Post Office for all damages incurred. All the above seems blindingly obvious as the only response. No doubt after the initial furore created by the programme, the government will find reasons to delay and obfuscate in the way recent governments have. And that is from David Gosney, Clayhill Close, Waltham Chase.
And this is a letter from Stephen Percy, Blocked Path. Pedestrians in Winchester city centre are not strangers to navigating around blockages on the pavements, but these tables on Jury Street take the biscuit, reducing the width of the busy thoroughfare outside two restaurants to just 3 feet. Why is this allowed? And this is from Stephen Percy of Eastern Winchester.
And this is about a proposed housing development near Peter Simmons College. I was delighted that the Hampshire Chronicle helpfully published an article after Alfred Holmes applied for 7 homes near Peter Simmons College. That was on January 4th. As a long-standing resident of Berwick Road, I would like to further raise awareness of the proposal to demolish a fine private house to build 7 executive-style houses on the 1-acre site, with associated road access, parking and landscaping. The house in question, 30 Berwick Road, was originally known simply as Berwick, being the grandest of the houses built towards the end of the 19th century on land formerly known as Morningdale Field, owned by St Mary's College, Winton. The splendid row of late Victorian and early Edwardian houses have characterised the area and formed a prominent feature of the tree-lined landscape, being on high ground on the edge of the city, prior to the building of the now integral adjacent estates, and clearly constitute a significant heritage asset. The houses are predominantly privately owned and have been lovingly restored and maintained to preserve both them and the character of the area. These plans to demolish such a fine house would appear to be based on financial gain for both the owners and the developers, and would do nothing to enhance the area or help with much needed affordable housing. The loss of both the green space and the historic dwelling runs counter to all arguments to protect the environment, ecology, history and aesthetics. The traffic and pollution issues in an already heavily congested road, which is used as a regular bus route, should be of great concern. The safety of motorists and the huge number of pedestrians using the road to access Peter Simmons College and Lanterns Nursery School, and those coming to and from Westgate and Western schools, must also be considered. Surely there should be some way of preserving and protecting our historic city from this type of senseless destruction. Surely we have enough pricey posh houses in cul-de-sacs built on former green plots. And that diatribe comes from Jos Goulder of Berwick Road in Winchester.
And Robin Atkins writes, Rugby Pitch. In 2012, New Alsford Town Council, NATC, with full support of Alsford Rugby Club, acquired a piece of land adjacent to Albury Park for £250,000, Unfortunately, this was insufficient to enable the construction of 2 rugby pitches, which was the basic requirement. Consequently, NATC entered into a lease for further land by way of a short lease to 2027 to build a 2nd pitch with landlord Rodney Morgan Giles. This lease had 3 main clauses. Non-renewable, reinstatement to original state and annual increase based on RPI. The total public cost of this project has now reached £500,000. I have asked NATC to inform the public of 2 main questions. What alternatives exist if Morgan Giles does not renew the lease? What will NATC offer Morgan Giles to sell the land or grant a new lease? NATC have refused to answer either question. Furthermore, NATC have refused to set out the reinstatement costs. All NATC discussions are in secret meetings with no disclosure to the public. Morgan Giles' main object is to obtain planning for 60 houses on his land nearer the avenue. 100-plus residents are extremely concerned that NATC will support this planning application in return for a new rugby lease. This matter is of major public concern for all Alsford residents. And that was from Robin Atkins, Lindley Gardens, Alsford.
And this is a letter from Stephen Griffiths, Polluting Buses. We are supposed to be making Winchester more green with expensive city centre parking to deter traffic. So why do we have these old buses from King Alfred Bus Company polluting the city centre? Chronicle, January the 4th. Couldn't they go somewhere out of the city centre? And this is from Stephen Griffiths of Eastgate Street, Winchester.
I'm pleased to read this about the little restaurant called Gastronomia, because I've been there myself. It's sad to hear that La Gastronomia restaurant has been hit with massively increased charges out of the blue for its essential supplies of olive oil. Owner Sergio Mitrano certainly doesn't deserve this. His restaurant provides some of the best quality cuisine in town. The food is delicious, the service is excellent, and the atmosphere is right to enjoy the very best eating experience. Ours was of a hospitable and friendly ambiance. Sergio overheard us from the kitchen as we told two lady fellow diners that we were there for our 30th wedding anniversary, and he joined us for a photo call. As our chef, he deserved the highest compliments and earns our thanks for his contribution to the event. We strongly urge people in Winchester to support Sergio and his business. They won't be disappointed. And there's a picture of the writer of this letter, John Morse, with Sergio and a couple of other diners in the restaurant. And they are writing from Hyde Close in Winchester.
And this letter from Edna Bowden is Sporting Chance. How right Emma Back, Winchester Sport and Leisure Trust, is. Sport is an important part of health and well-being for people. News that the developer behind the proposed housing development on South Winchester Golf Course, Bloor Homes, has launched a sport survey to test the water for new sporting facilities in Winchester is fantastic. However, the published survey is unfortunately superficial at best and is focused upon individuals' needs rather than those of the clubs and societies who really understand the negative impact that the lack of sports and leisure facilities creates. So, while it's 7 out of 10 for effort and 3 out of 10 for execution, this is still a wonderful opportunity to bring new sports and leisure facilities to Winchester. So anyone interested in new sports for the city should please complete the survey and be sure not to be afraid of using the other option at the bottom of the list if you would like to see facilities for sports that are hugely popular but sit outside the mainstream. I know I am biased, as I have personally seen the positive and diverse community impact that ice skating had when we had a rink in Southampton, and the subsequent decline when it closed in 1988. Along with many sports that have captured the imagination of us all at Olympic Games of the past, we need to voice our interest in having these facilities for us all to enjoy into the future. Winchester is uniquely placed to build both high-quality housing and high-quality sport and leisure facilities that local residents would love to use over the coming years. So, whether it's a new ice rink, boxing club, or all-weather pitches for hockey and football, please have your say and say yes to the creation of more local sports facilities for our Olympians and World Cup winners of the future. And that's from Edna Bowden, Winchester Ice Sport Association, Green Hill Road, Full Flood, and is accompanied by a picture of the South Winchester Golf Club with a beautiful lake and the golf area and surrounded by what look like very old thatched cottages.
And this is a letter from the Reverend Canon Dr. Roland Ream, and he is in fact the Vice Dean and Canon Chancellor of Winchester Cathedral, and it's about the Austin statue. The public consultation with Martin Jennings about his Jane Austen sculpture has been fixed for 2 p.m. Monday, the February the 26th at the Wessex Centre. Anyone with an interest in shaping the future of the close would be welcome to attend, though if you plan to motor in, please use the city car parks. A concern worth addressing earlier than the consultation is whether this sculpture to be installed in 2025 fits the monastic character of the inner close. This character was, of course, considerably altered by the 16th century Reformation, when public access was first granted to this land, an undoubted change for the better. Monastic buildings were rebuilt as residential homes for clergy, and land parcelled up into gardens. 100 years ago, the front garden of Number 9, the Close, on which the Austin sculpture will be sited, was private land surrounded by iron railings, the footings of which can still be seen in the masonry plinth around the lawn. The inner close should be seen, then, not only as the former site of two medieval cloisters, but also as a swathe of gardens, some parts of which have recently been opened for the pleasure of the public. In this respect, fine artworks in gardens are a worthy addition to the close. As Alan Titchmarsh, honorary president of the Hampshire Gardens Trust, has remarked on this planned sculpture, sometimes a statue is just the focus a garden needs to give it a unique sense of place. What could be more fitting than a graceful memorial to Jane Austen, so near to where she died and was buried, in such beautiful and historic surroundings? And that's from the Reverend Canon Dr. Ronald Ream of Winchester Cathedral, the Close, Winchester.
This comes from David Brown of Station Close, Wickham, and is entitled The Poor Suffer. Year in, year out, hundreds of square miles of flat, watertight surfaces are built upon. House roofs, driveways, sheds, garages, pathways, roads, etc. throughout the length of the UK. No new infrastructure to relieve the existing waterways in place, just keep adding to the old network. The government has this policy in place of build, 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 build our way out of the homeless problem, look at the consequences. Rishi Sunak has just announced a further 50,000 asylum seekers are to receive citizenship. So thousands more houses have to be built just to satisfy that demand. What the hell are the government thinking? I propose that a new building development, solely for the purpose of housing ministers, be constructed on the floodplains in Somerset. This would be a fraction of what is required for our new British citizens. After being flooded out year after year, ministers might begin to realise a problem exists. Unfortunately, if they are not personally affected, they just don't fully understand how the poor affected people are suffering. All new houses should have a boat and a mooring as standard in the driveway of this if this mentality is to continue.
And Tony Gaster writes, vital work. Last year might be regarded as the year of strikes, and some are still continuing. Might we spare a thought for those who work non-stop to collect our refuse and run our recycling centres? Not the most glamorous of jobs, yet absolutely vital. Such services continue in all weathers, and I, for one, am very grateful. And that's from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery.
And this is a letter from M. Smith, headed Slick Exercise. I know that I am late to the party here, but why are not more people outraged at the proposal being put forward by the Hospital Trust in regards to the new treatment centre to be built? This is a very slick exercise, as this is a done deal. The public meetings are merely listening, not actual consultation. The result will be Winchester is completely downgraded in favour of Basingstoke, but sold to people with the wouldn't-you-rather tactic. Designed to offset, belittle and gloss over instead of actually facing questions with real answers. Travel to the new centre will be nigh on impossible, especially for those of the wider area south of Winchester. The budget of £700 million to £900 million is to be sent, as the claim is, that they can't afford to staff both sites. So how are they going to staff another new site? Surely it would be better to use the money to improve all three existing sites and then staff them at the correct level, rather than subject the rest of the country to these arrangements that will in the end benefit no one. And this is from M. Smith of Christchurch Road, Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor for this week. Thank you to all of the contributors. Now we're going on to an alternative look at the news, because David is going to read a Belgarum diary.
Well, there are two articles. The first one is about Hen Dog's artwork portraying the big issue seller, Kev Colick, in his green Christmas outfit. And it tells us that the Hen Dog work won't stay. As the demolition of the former Friarsgate Medical Centre nears its end, one section of wall has remained untouched. Hen Dog's well-known artwork of the big issue seller Kev Colick has been kept throughout the work. The 1960s surgery, unused since 2014, is being demolished to make way for a pop-up park and ultimately be part of the Central Winchester Regeneration, better known as the Silver Hill Scheme. However, any rumours of the artwork being kept were quashed this week as Winchester City Council confirmed that it would be going. The spokesman said the reason this wall remains is that in the plans, part of the wall is retained to create a screen or potential seating from it for the next phase, but the artwork won't remain. Another Hen Dog image of a homeless teddy bear is on a building on Chesil Street, which is also earmarked to be knocked down for the expansion of the Chesil Theatre. And the second one is entitled Going Gaga for Clueless Comics. A legendary Radio 4 comedy show is bringing its live tour to Hampshire in March. I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue will be at the O2 Guildhall on Saturday, March 23rd. Described as the multi-award-winning Antidote to Panel Games, the live show will feature Jack D, Rory Bremner, Pippa Evans, Tony Hawks and Marcus Bridgestock, for an evening of inspired nonsense with musical accompaniment from Colin Sell. Jack D, who grew up in Winchester, said, "The show goes from strength to strength, and you can only imagine my delight to be finally working with people who know that Oasis isn't a soft drink and that Lady Gaga isn't an aristocrat in a dementia home. And there's a picture of Jack D with his characteristic grumpy face.
Now, this week's first person is by Kimberly Barber, and Jane's going to read it.
And Kimberly is the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle and writes points of view about the news. Last week, a reader wrote to me asking for an explanation about why a story we had run online had not made the print edition. In it, they said, "Can you please explain to me why we pay good money to have and read the Hampshire Chronicle when an important piece of news about an attempted murder in Stanmore has not been seen in the paper? As an older customer and loyal, we wonder what else is not included, but is prominent on the internet paper of yours. Having purchased a Chronicle for more than 60 years, I know you can do better than this. Or are you trying to force us to go online? Which we will never do. Explanation, please." Other people may have had the same thought, so probably best to explain to everyone. The incident happened on a Wednesday after the week's Chronicle had gone to press. The case was due in court on the Friday, and that's the story put online. However, by the next printed Hampshire Chronicle the week after, it would have been out of date, as we needed the court hearing result. This is where we are a bit slower than usual, and with the court not immediately sending out the result, our reporters being busy elsewhere, staff taking annual leave and some being sick, it slipped off the radar and we did not chase meaning it did not make last week's Chronicle. However, I am pleased to say that we do now have the details, see page 2. Yes, we could have been quicker, and for that I can only apologise, and reassure residents of Stanmore and those interested that as soon as the case appears in court, meaning we are legally able to print the details, we will be there, and a report will be in the Hampshire Chronicle. It's never our intention to force print readers online, or to force online readers to read the printed edition. I'm very conscious that both audiences are different. I acknowledge there are some of you who do both, thank you. Local news is a juggling act, and while we have targets for online growth, as that is where the long-term future of the Hampshire Chronicle most likely lies, we also respect that it still has a strong and large loyal print audience who go out and buy a physical copy each week. Unfortunately, this print audience is slowly declining across the industry, not just as the older readers become even older and eventually no longer able to buy it, but through many different reasons. It's now harder to buy a copy, with fewer newsagents, plus a lot of people buying their shopping online, so never need to go to a supermarket to see the paper for an impulse purchase. The cost of living crisis has not helped, nor has the rise in our cover price, brought in to combat rising production costs, which the boss will stress is lower than inflation and much less than our competitors in the local newspaper market. At the same time, the appetite for local news is still there, stronger than ever. We have a record-breaking audience for the Hampshire Chronicle website, reaching more than 1 million people every month, and a record amount of digital subscribers who can access a digital version of the paper and get all their news while not having to see so many ads. Our social media accounts, of which there are too many to mention here, reach hundreds of thousands of people every month. The way people, especially younger people, consume local news has changed. But if you add all those figures together, the Hampshire Chronicle is reaching a huge audience from all over. I have been part of a project to improve the printed newspapers across the company. We have been conducting reviews and focusing editors' minds. It's been refreshing to hear the printed newspaper talked about so much. Some small changes have already been made, as have some other bigger projects, like the front page redesign, and there are some harder-to-crack problems going through the motions right now. Whatever happens, I wanted to reassure readers that the print edition is important to me, but much like being a mum of two in my personal life, I do also care about our digital audience. However you keep up with the Hampshire Chronicle, thank you.
Now Margaret's got the editorial comment.
And this is headed, "The Disgrace of Water Supply Failings." Some people might sneer that it is a first world problem, but the water supply issue is a disgrace. Southern Water said 470 households lost their supply over the weekend, although the widespread nature of the water loss across the city would suggest the actual number is much higher. It really is appalling that in the 21st century, such a basic amenity cannot be relied on. Don't forget, there were even greater problems across Winchester, Eastleigh and Southampton in December 2022. The Conservative government in the 1980s decided the water industry needed to be freed from the dead hand of state ownership, that its opening to the free market would be to customers' benefit. More than 30 years on, most sensible-minded people would acknowledge that was a mistake, with billions of pounds paid out in dividends rather than being invested in upgrading aged infrastructure. The sad thing is that with the best will in the world, the chronic problems are now so entrenched that it will be decades before this issue is sorted.
I've got something about Winchester Cathedral here. The Winchester Cathedral touch tours for blind and partially sighted visitors. Last year, the cathedral began providing pre-bookable touch tours designed especially for blind and partially sighted visitors. The tour provides a history of the building and the stories of some of those who worked there or who were buried in the cathedral. There are opportunities to touch the building stone that will enhance your understanding of the various styles of architecture of the cathedral. Also, you'll be able to touch certain of the cathedral's treasures. The next tour will be on Wednesday the 24th of January at 11 a.m. Bookings can be made in person at the box office just inside the cathedral or by ringing the box office on 01962 857 275. Or you can even get hold of them online. And the way to do that is box.office@winchester-cathedral.org.uk. I'll do that one again because it's a bit complicated. box.office@winchester-cathedral.org.uk. Now the lighting up time on Friday the 19th of January ends at 7:59 a.m. and begins at 4:34 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 24th of January, it ends at 7:54 a.m. and begins at 4:42 p.m. Now we're going on to further items of general news, and we'll start with an item beginning with David.
This article is entitled "Former Mayor Denies Sex Assault Charge," and there's a picture of former Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Derek Green, in his tricorn hat. A former mayor has pleaded not guilty to a charge of sexual assault against a teenage girl at a bonfire night event. Derek Green, 67, of Battery Hill, Stanmore, in Winchester, who appeared at Basingstoke Magistrate Court on Thursday, January the 11th, denied the charge and chose for his case to be heard at a Crown Court. As previously reported, it was reported that a 16-year-old girl was touched inappropriately over her clothing at the Winchester Bonfire and Fireworks display at River Park on Saturday, November the 5th, 2022. Mr. Green, who was at the event in an official capacity as the Mayor of Winchester, was later charged by police. He was stood down from further engagements and did not stand for re-election in May 2023. At Basingstoke Magistrates Court, Mr. Green spoke only to say his name and address and to plead not guilty. Prosecutor Kerry Richardson told the three magistrates that the offence is at the lower end of the threshold and can be heard at a magistrates' court. The magistrates gave Mr. Green the opportunity to decide whether his matter be heard at a lower court or by a jury at the Crown Court. Mr. Green said he would like the matter to be heard at the Crown Court. He was represented by Drew Pettifer. The magistrate then adjourned the case to Winchester Crown Court on Wednesday, February the 14th.
And here we have meeting over hospital plan. Winchester people will be able to have their say on proposals to close the A&E unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. As previously reported, the closure is part of the plans for a new £700 to £900 million specialist acute hospital on the edge of Basingstoke. Under the plans, the RHCH would be refurbished and a 24/7 urgent treatment centre opened. The maternity unit would also be downgraded to a midwife-led. Hampshire Together will consult on the plans at Week Community Centre on Taplings Road from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Tuesday, January the 23rd. The consultation will feature a presentation, followed by a question and answer session. While the event is free to attend, anyone wishing to go must book online beforehand by visiting the Hampshire Together website. A consultation has already taken place at Basingstoke Hospital on Monday, January the 15th. During the event, attendees were given a presentation by several speakers, including the Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, Alex Wickfield, Dr. Lara Alloway, the Chief Medical Officer, CMO, for Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board, Interim Chief Medical Officer Nick Ward and Shirlene O, the Chief Strategy Population Health Officer. The new options are a new hospital at the current site of Basing Hospital, the preferred option for a new hospital at Junction 7 of the M3, or a third, identical to Option 2, other than having nurse-led rehabilitation beds at the current Basingstoke Hospital site.
Bring NHS dentistry back from the edge. Winchester MP Steve Brine spoke of the challenge ministers face when it comes to improving access to NHS dentistry in a speech in the House of Commons. The MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, who chairs the Health Select Committee, says he is doing his utmost to press ministers for a comprehensive and sustainable response to a report published last year setting out what the government should do to revive the service. That report was described by the British Dental Association as an instruction manual to save NHS dentistry, and ministers responded to it just before Christmas. Mr. Brine said, "My committee challenged the new Secretary of State to set out how she intends to realise the laudable ambition that everyone who needs one should have access to an NHS dentist. On the contract dentists, have with the NHS, which many say is critical to why so many are leaving, Mr. Bryan recognised that the government has taken action, but said that while some initial changes were made in 2022, further fundamental reform is needed. Mr. Bryan said, "We must urgently provide compelling incentives to attract new and existing dentists to undertake NHS work. And we must see the long-promised dental recovery plan, which includes the short-term set of actions to help those suffering real pain today, and a fully funded plan to bring NHS dentistry back from the edge."
This is entitled, "Downgrade for Maternity Unit Would Improve Care." A downgrading of the maternity unit at Winchester Hospital would bring an overall improvement in care for babies and their mothers, say health bosses. NHS specialists say the proposals to change the location of some maternity and neonatal services across Hampshire hospitals, NHS Foundation Trust, also known as HHFT, could lead to better outcomes for parents-to-be and newborn babies. The maternity unit at Florence Portal House at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital would become midwife-led under a £700 to £900 million plans to reconfigure hospital care across much of central and north Hampshire. Other controversial changes include the closure of the A&E unit at the RHCH and its replacement by an urgent treatment centre. A new specialist acute hospital would be built near Junction 7 of the M3, just south of Basingstoke, or at the current hospital site in the town. A public consultation is running until March 17th. The Royal Hampshire County Hospital would focus more on planned procedures and operations. The new hospital would concentrate on strokes, heart attacks and life-threatening injuries. The RHCH Urgent Treatment Centre would be open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and be doctor-led. Outpatients, diagnostics and therapy services would also remain at the Romsey Road site. HHFT say its plans would see significant investment in Winchester Hospital and give expectant parents more choice about how and where they give birth. A new specialist acute hospital would have a birthing unit led by consultant obstetricians and a specialist neonatal care unit. Avidia Nijad, consultant in maternity, fetal medicine and clinical director for women's health services at the Trust, said maternity services needed to be reorganised. "Bringing doctor-led maternity services onto one site would mean we have consultants on site for more hours than we do at the moment, giving families and babies safer care." Liz McLeod, head of midwifery at Winchester Andover Hospital, said, "We're keen to listen to people's views on all our proposals, including those around maternity care, and are encouraging as many as people as possible to take part in our consultation. This is your NHS. Please do take the opportunity to have your say."
And here we have schools up in lights for a birthday celebration. A Winchester school lit up the front of its building to mark the start of its 140th birthday celebrations. St. Swithin's School was founded in 1884 by Anna Bramston. The all-girls school has a range of activities planned throughout the year to celebrate the milestone. On March the 17th, the school community will come together for an evensong at Winchester Cathedral and drinks reception. Current students will celebrate with a birthday lunch and party on May the 3rd before the Founders Day concert that evening. Students across both the senior and prep school will come together on July the 4th to take on St. Swithin's challenges to raise funds for the Bramston Bursary Foundation. Finally, pupils are researching the history of the school and its links to Winchester and the wider local community. Jane Gandy, headmistress, said, "We are proud of the positive impact the school has had on generations of girls since its inception in 1884. Anna Bramston set about forming the school because she saw a lack of appropriate education for young women. 140 years on, we are passionate about ensuring that all of our students have opportunities to learn who they are and what they can aspire to be without being laden with lazy, gender-based stereotypes." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the large St Swithin's building all lit up in purple and red, and looking very glamorous and colourful.
Protests at plan to close tips to save £1.6 million a year. Opposition is mounting to plans to close several rubbish tips, including Alsford and Bishop's Waltham, to save the County Council £1.6 million per year. The Council's plan will also impact opening hours and days and change the types of waste accepted at household waste recycling centres. The Council has presented its proposal as part of the plan to meet the forecasted £132 million budget shortfall by April 2025. Three tips near Winchester would be closed. They are Alsford, Bishop's Waltham and Fair Oak. Hampshire County Council has identified these as the smallest sites, the poorest performing and most expensive to run. The closure of these four sites, along with the Hayling Island site, would save approximately £500,000 per year. Further closures could happen in the Aldershot, Borden, Casbrook, Hedge End, Marchwood, Petersfield and Somerley sites, according to a council report. The council said that with the closure of the 12 sites, a larger proportion of Hampshire households would be affected, but it would save up to £1.6 million. A public consultation on the plans is currently open for residents to make their opinions heard. It will close on March the 31st. Members of the public will be able to give feedback on the plans online or via a printable form. Winchester City Councils have raised concerns about Hampshire County Council's proposal. Councillor Frank Pearson, Ward Councillor for Central Meon Valley, told the Chronicle, "Frankly, I find the proposal quite disgusting. It has been in the air for several years now. The council has been talking about closing them in favour of super tips, such as the one in Winchester. A lot of people will say that closing the tips is going to increase the amount of fly tipping. It is a big problem." Jonathan Williams, Ward Councillor for Bishop's Waltham, said, "This won't just cut recycling, but also risks increasing fly tipping, traffic and pollution." Margot Power, Ward Councillor for Alsford, said, "The County Council has been running down the Alsford tip since 2016. They've restricted pedestrian access, cut what can be disposed of there, and introduced an onerous booking system, then complain that not enough people use it." Councillor Fiona Isaacs, who is also a ward councillor for Alsford, said, "I have asked community groups and residents to join a non-political group looking at options to see what our plan would be if the Alsford tip does close." And there's a picture of three ladies with masks on standing outside a recycling tip with a banner which is saying "Access for All," and I guess it's probably the Alsford tip.
This is about the restaurant La Gastronomia again. A delivery company has apologised for wrongfully charging a Winchester restaurant £100. UPS refunded Sergio Mitrano, owner of La Gastronomia, for an incorrect extra £100 bill for an olive oil delivery from Italy. As previously reported, Mr. Mitrano was instructed to pay £100 before he could accept his two boxes of Italian oil from UPS, despite having already paid £300, including delivery costs. After the Chronicle asked UPS the reason behind the surprise charge, Mr. Mitrano received a call saying it was a mistake and was subsequently refunded. A spokesperson for UPS said, "Customer service is at the centre of all that we do. In this case, VAT charges were misapplied. We have been in touch with Mr. Mitrano and have provided a refund, and we regret any inconvenience caused." However, the Italian restaurant owner is now worried the same has happened to other businesses. He said, "Of course I'm happy they investigated and discovered it was a mistake, but it didn't get published in the newspaper. If it hadn't been published in the newspaper, nothing would have happened. How many people have already been charged by mistake, and where has all this money gone? I wish the issue was fixed for all the people, not just me. Mr. Matrano opened La Gastronomia in Bridge Street last February and has since expanded its seating to upstairs. The business, including a deli, was one of the first independent Italian restaurants to open in Winchester in many years.
And here we have ways of setting up 20 mile per hour speed limits could change. There could be changes to how 20 miles per hour speed limits are rolled out in Hampshire if new HAP plans are approved. Parish and town councils could request and fund 20 miles per hour speed limits in suitable zones on a full cost recovery basis under new speed limit criteria. All proposed speed limit changes will still require approval from the county council as the highway authority and must meet the technical criteria set out within the revised policy. The revised policy for 20 mph speed limits and zones will be presented by the council at a meeting on January the 15th. The update comes 1 year after the 20 mph Task and Finish Working Group presented its findings and recommendations to the Universal Services Transport and Environment Select Committee, which some working group members did not support. The revised policy will provide a mechanism similar to the successful community-funded traffic management initiative for individual parish and town councils to request and then fund 20 mile per hour speed limits and zones. Those who wish to apply for a 20 mph speed limit or zone must pay for any needed investigations, including traffic surveys and the full design and installation cost of any new measures. As part of the costs, those councils will be required to pay a commuted sum which enables the county council to maintain all the new signs, posts, road markings and other measures. An application form will be produced and made available shortly. It will be subject to a non-refundable application fee of £175 to cover the initial technical and prioritisation assessments. The fee required to progress a traffic order, which involves the statutory consultation process necessary to make any speed limit changes legal and enforceable, is about £10,000. This does not include the expenses associated with investigating, designing and installing the scheme. Even if a proposed change in speed limit is considered justified, there is no guarantee that it will be implemented. The proposal must go through the statutory traffic order process, which includes advertising and consultation, before the decision-making process can begin. At this point, any concerns or objections raised by the local community will be taken into consideration, the County Council said. Parish and town councils will have to pay up front for all scheme costs, and these costs won't be refunded if a scheme is rejected. Hence, a report said, it's important to demonstrate local support before applying for the new 20 mph speed limit or zone. Introducing new 20 mph limits and zones will continue to be assessed as a casualty reduction solution. Places with a history of speed-related collisions based on police injury collision record data will continue to be progressed and funded by the County Council. Police injury collision data will also be a vital factor in scheme prioritisation. The County Council will also consider introducing 20 mph speed limits and zones as part of schemes and projects that support shifts to a more active travel modes, or as part of a public realm or regeneration improvement. Requests for schemes will be subject to a detailed technical and legal assessment and prioritisation and ranking. Hampshire County Council said no additional funding is available to provide new schemes beyond those that would help reduce casualties. Therefore, schemes would only be progressed via the community-funded initiative, grant funding opportunities or other external funding, such as developer contributions. Universal Services Select Committee members are due to continue debating the policy. And this long debate is, not surprisingly, accompanied by a picture of a 20 a traffic sign, which we may or may not be getting.
Army site needs imaginative plan. MP Steve Bryan has told the House of Commons an imaginative master plan is needed for the replacement of Sir John Moore Barracks. As previously reported, the site north of Winchester is due for disposal in 2026 under the Army's Future Soldier strategy that will bring first phase training onto its Pirbright site. The comments from the MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford came on Monday, January the 8th, after he met senior officials from the DIO, Defence Infrastructure Organisation, and officers from the Flowerdown site on Friday, January the 4th. At the meeting, he was given an update on plans for a facility that was repurposed in 1986 as an army training regiment to replace Peninsula Barracks. Mr. Bryan told the House of Commons, "Right now we seem set to put 900 houses on the site, and asked to meet a minister at the Ministry of Defence, so I can be sure this ministerial team remain fully behind this disposal, and, if so, to ensure we end up with an imaginative master plan that doesn't just end up being a way for Winchester City Council to meet its housing targets." He added, "I have stayed very close to plans for the site since its disposal was announced, and know there is a lot of interest in what comes next, especially among my constituents living in Hayes-Stockton and Littleton, who are anxious, for instance, to safeguard an open space for nature and recreation." The DIO are clearly working hard to engage residents, and the workshops last month were an important part of that. But we need to widen that now and make sure it doesn't end up, despite all the best intentions, being just another housing estate north of Winchester that is, remember, set to be almost half the size of Barton Farm. I also want to make sure this new set of ministers remain committed to the disposal of SJMB, given a fast-changing world, and if they do, to ensure there remains clear ministerial oversight to make the best of what is a very large piece of Winchester real estate." Defence Minister James Cartledge agreed to meet Mr. Bryan as soon as possible.
Vintage style as Jive Aces swing into town. Vintage swing and classic rock and roll will be at the Theatre Royal when the Jive Aces come to Winchester at the end of this month. The band has been together for more than 25 years and entertained audiences worldwide with swing music and their vintage style. They will perform tunes from the swing era to the days of the Rat Pack, with songs from artists like Bobby Darin, Sammy Davis Jr. and Ella Fitzgerald, plus a selection of original tunes. The Jive Aces have played for the Queen and sold out the Royal Albert Hall. They became the first band to reach the finals of ITV's Britain's Got Talent, and have awards for their contribution to music, to charity work, and their music videos. They've also worked with celebrities including Van Morrison, Status Quo, Jamie Cullum, and Priscilla Presley. The Jive Aces will be at the Theatre Royal Winchester on Friday, January the 26th at 7:30 p.m. There's a lovely picture of the band of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all in yellow suits. It looks a very lively affair.
And here we have a flipping good time on offer in Pancake Race. Winchester Rotary is calling on local businesses, charities and schools to sign up for a flipping good time in the annual Pancake Day race. The popular annual event will be back on Shrove Tuesday, February the 13th, in the outer close of the cathedral grounds. This year, the event is being sponsored by Winchester property developer Gentian, and proceeds will all go to the Winchester Hospice. Competitors run a stretch of 38 metres, flipping a pancake three times before handing over the frying pan to their teammate. Prizes will be on offer for the fastest time and the best costumes. Last year saw a total of 26 teams race, with Pilgrim School Cathedral Choristers taking the top spot. And this is accompanied by a delightful photograph from the last year Pancake Day race outside the cathedral, with a group of Winchester Rotary people all in their bright orange jackets, and most of them with holding in their hands large frying pans, and a couple of them actually managed to toss the pancakes up into the air and beaming. Hopefully they're going to come back into the... One of them's going very high in the sky. Hopefully will come back into the frying pan.
Former cafe site close to deal with new retailer. The site of a former cafe, which closed suddenly last year, is close to being let after lying empty for nearly 5 months. The building in the square is being let by Goadsby Winchester. Alan Pickering, who is managing the letting, said the property is under offer and we expect to have the new lease completed very soon. We are looking forward to a new retailer taking over the space, as we know they will be a great addition to Winchester. The identity of the new business has not been released. The site was previously the location of the cafe and bar Autumn House, which suddenly closed in August last year. As previously reported, the business was owned by Alex Donnan and Laura Turner. An ex-employee of Autumn House, who asked to remain anonymous, said that staff were not informed of the closure until the last possible moment. Autumn House shut its doors on Monday, August the 21st. A small sign on the front door read, "Autumn House will be closed today until further notice. Thank you for your understanding." The cafe and wine bar replaced the long-standing Dingham's Cook Shop, which closed at the beginning of last year, when it could no longer afford to pay its rent to Winchester City Council.
Parents locked out. New figures show the cost of childcare for parents in Hampshire. The government made expanding free childcare a key pledge in last year's budget to help parents back into the workforce. Currently, parents earning below £100,000 can claim 15 hours of free care for children aged 3 or 4, but this will expand to 2-year-olds from April. However, a children's charity has said parents are still being locked out of work by expensive rates. New estimates from the Department of Education suggest parents in Hampshire were paying £5.97 an hour in 2023 to have their 2-year-olds looked after, similar to the England average of £6.07. For children aged 3 and 4, childcare costs parents in the area of £5.85 an hour, also close to the national average of £5.90 for this age group. The Department of Education surveyed 200 childcare providers for 2-year-olds in Hampshire and 202 for those aged 3 and 4. Ellen Broom, Managing Director of Coram Family and Children, said high costs have been an issue for many years. She said, "At a time when family budgets are under extreme pressure, the cost of childcare is making it near impossible for families to increase their income by working more hours. And too many parents, particularly mothers, are effectively locked out of work as they can't make the sums add up." Separate figures from the Office for National Statistics show employment rates among young parents, particularly mothers, are significantly lower than their peers.
And now times tables tests add up for more maths pupils. Children in Hampshire have improved their basic multiplication skills, new figures show. Last year was the second time every Year 4 pupil was required to complete a standard times tables test to help monitor the teaching of mathematics in England. But some experts have branded it unnecessary, saying it is unhelpful for teachers. Department for Education data reveals 14,828 pupils across 328 Hampshire schools took the test at the end of the last school year. They were asked 25 multiplication questions up to and including the 12 times table. Their average score was 19.8, an increase on last year when it was 16.5. Nationally, there was a marginal improvement on last year's average mark, which increased from 90.8 to 20.2. Across England, more than 640,000 pupils were eligible for the test, with more than 623,000 taking it in 16,405 schools. Among the 4% of pupils who did not take the test, most were working below the level of the assessment and were recorded as having special educational needs. However, some education experts have cast doubt on the usefulness of the checks. Tiffany Harris, primary and data specialist at the Association of School and College Leaders, said schools already regularly test multiplication skills. She said, "Adding unnecessary tests on top of existing assessment methods is unhelpful for teachers and leaders tasked with delivering an already crowded curriculum." Some 29% of pupils scored 25 out of 25, an increase of on 222 when it was 2022 when it was 27.6%. This was the most common score achieved. The figures also reveal differences in the performance of different groups. On average, the 2,949 pupils in Hampshire who received preschool meals scored worse than their peers, with an average score of 17.3 compared to 20.5. Boys in Hampshire scored an average of 20.1, better than girls who scored 19.6. London was the highest performing region in England, with an average score of 21.1. The South West was the lowest performing with 19.7. The government said it introduced the checks as part of a series of reforms based on best practice from countries such as Singapore and China. Schools Minister Damien Hine said, "Mastering times tables by age 9 will make sure children can tackle more complex maths later on in life, as well as help them with everyday adult activities." And it's accompanied by a young boy sitting down with the test in front of him, which does look slightly confusing, but I can just about see that there are one or two here, such as 323 times 100. Not quite sure how that fits into it.
Teddies for Tragedies, setting off for new homes. The collection of knitted teddy bears, which gave seasonal colour to the Oliver's Battery postbox, are ready for pastures new. Members of Oliver's Battery Women's Institute and the local community joined forces to knit the teddies for tragedy, which are now destined to go to children in war zones. The organisation responsible for initiating the concept relies on the goodwill of groups and individuals to produce a variety of items, which are then sent to those places where they are needed. And there's a lovely picture of the pillar box in Oliver's Battery with a pile of teddies on the top, although I do see there are a couple of dogs there as well, and they've got wonderful knitted jumpers, and they all look as if they've got different personalities.
Fraudster who dashed dreams. A fraudster who wiped out a Winchester businessman's retirement fund has been jailed. Philip Whettingsteel stole £275,000 from Rory O'Mara of Closed Bridging Finance, leaving the 52-year-old's early retirement plans in tatters. His crimes caused so much anguish that a website was even set up warning people about him, branding the 72-year-old as pond life and a scumbag. Mr. O'Mara from Kingsworthy said, "Our home is at risk and my sanity. There isn't a day that goes by where I don't feel sick." He's not made any attempt to repay a single penny of his debts. Prosecutor Michael Foster told Southampton Crown Court how in 2017 Whettingsteel requested 3 loans from Mr. O'Mara. At the time, Whettingsteel was director of PWT Recycle Limited, an aggregates and waste company based at Bivouac Park in Southampton. He claimed he needed loans worth £275,000 to solve cash flow issues, but the convincing scammer pocketed the money for himself, stealing 79% of Mr. O'Mara's life savings. Mr. O'Mara said, "I could never comprehend that an individual can be so utterly dishonest. Our hard-earned money has been sunk into a black hole. Our lives after the fraud were nothing short of traumatic." Around 2018, a website with the name philipwhettingsteel.com was set up to warn people of his crimes. Much of it is written as if by the criminal himself. It claims to teach people how to make a very good living year in, year out by just cheating, robbing, scamming, and outright deceiving people and companies to their faces with no shame whatsoever. It goes on to say, "To be honest, you will be considered pond life and a scumbag just like me, but what are a few names when you can get hold of the sort of money that I get?" In November last year, Whettingsteel, now of Barton-on-Sea, pleaded guilty to three counts of fraud against Mr. O'Mara. Defending Whettingsteel at his sentencing on Thursday at Southampton Crown Court, Giles Bedloe said he did not intend to deprive Close Bridging Finance of the funds permanently. Judge Brian Forster, KC, described Whettingsteel's action as a betrayal of Mr. O'Mara's trust. He said, "The offending has had a considerable and understandable effect on Mr. O'Mara and his family. His dreams were dashed." Whettingsteel was handed a prison sentence of 2.5 years and a company director's disqualification order for 6 years.
And here we have Rotary Aid for Ukraine. A Hampshire Rotary Club is due to send 5 incubators to hospitals in Ukraine. Bishop's Waltham Rotary Club will be shipping the much-needed equipment in the next few months. The club previously sent warm clothing, sleeping bags and medical supplies and was put in touch with the Ukraine Medical Association. A Rotary Club spokesman said, "We also have contact with and have supported the Hampshire Medical Fund, who provide the cutting-edge medical equipment to Hampshire Hospital NHS Trust in Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover. When a representative from Hampshire Medical Fund heard about our support to Ukraine, whilst giving a presentation to one of our weekly meetings, they informed us that they were in the process of supplying some new incubators to the Hampshire Hospital's NHS Trust. We quickly started the ball rolling to try and secure the outgoing incubators, which were still fully serviceable, so that we could, if successful, send them to Ukraine. So far, we have secured 5 desperately needed incubators, which will be shipped to Ukraine over the next couple of months, along with some other much-needed medical equipment."
Cheers, breweries, beer on tap in Parliament. A Hampshire-based brewery had its beer on tap in the House of Commons bar over the New Year's period. 4 Marks-based Triple F Brewery's Sundown Extra Pale Ale was the guest beer on sale in the Strangers Bar inside the Houses of Parliament during December. It was available to those watching the New Year's fireworks from the balcony overlooking the River Thames as the year came to an end. Sundown began life as Coronation, produced ahead of the coronation of King Charles, before becoming a year-round staple for the brewery. Zen Gladstone, Managing Director of Triple F, said, "We are honoured to be trusted with this high-profile time slot in the Strangers Bar and are extremely grateful to Damien Hines for all his support. We are all about beer and simply hope everyone enjoys Sundown and that we can be back here again one day. This was not the first time that a Triple F beer had graced the Strangers Bar. In 2009, the brewery provided its Alton's Pride beer for the bar after it was named Supreme Champion Beer of Britain 2008.
Groundwater flood alerts still in place after storm. Alerts for groundwater flooding were still active across Hampshire a week after Storm Henk hit the southeast. While the wet weather has passed, water levels remained high in some areas, with groundwater flooding where water rises from the underlying chalk rather than from rivers or streams a particular concern. In Hampshire, the Environment Agency issued flood alerts for groundwater flooding in Bishop Sutton, Bramdean and Cheriton, Hambledon, Hursley, King's Somborne and Little Somborne, Littleton, Headbourne Worthy, Kingsworthy and Martyr Worthy, Easton and Chilland, the Candovers and Old Orsford, Alton, Twyford and Hensting, and in the Meon Valley from East Meon to Soberton. Communities at risk in the Meon Valley included East Meon, West Meon, Warnford, Exton, Corhampton, Beanstoke, Droxford and Soberton. One alert cautioned, "The catchment remains sensitive to rainfall due to saturated ground and high groundwater levels. Low-lying land, gardens, roads and cellars will therefore continue to be at risk of flooding. Due to the nature of groundwater behaviour, this situation could continue for several weeks or longer. Drivers were told a long stretch of the A32 at Farringdon is at flood risk, and the flood alert for Twyford and Hensting warned that a small number of properties could expect to be affected by flooding.
And that concludes our extracts for this week.
Can I have a lotto?
Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts, and thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And thanks to today's readers, Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
David Baldwin.
Bye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening, and I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye.